It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome to Money for Lunch. You know, we are very blessed to live in America, and one of the blessings that come from living here in America is that we have limitless possibilities, right? We are not stuck where we're at. We can change, we can rethink, we can recreate ourselves, we can, you know, fail today, succeed tomorrow. We could succeed today and fail tomorrow. Limitless possibilities. And just sometimes I think that we get so caught up that we forget about the limitless possibilities, right? Just throwing that out there. Just didn't have any other deeper thought than that, you know, that no matter what the deal is, we have some great opportunities, and most of us, if not all of us, will fail multiple times before we succeed. And that is part of the plan. Absolutely part of the plan. All right, let's get it started. My first guest today, Jenna Moulton. Jenna Moulton owns a Scooter's Coffee franchise in Omaha, Nebraska. And Alexa, tell us, what is Scooter's Coffee?
Scooter's Coffee is a local. It started in Omaha, Nebraska in 1998, and we serve specialty coffee. We have coffee houses. We have coffee drive-thrus. We have fruit smoothies. It's a really fun place to work.
Excellent. And Jenna, I was actually talking to my buddy here from Amazon, and but I'm glad that you mentioned that. And so what's interesting about your story is that you actually started in the company in 2007 as a barista, and then you kind of worked your way up, and now you own your very own location. Is that right?
That is right. Yes, in 2007 I started.
Okay, and so in 2007, were you? Give us your background at that point. Were you, you know, fresh out of college? Where were you in life at that point?
In 2007, I became a brand new mom for the very first time, and I was looking for a part-time job at a coffee house. My first job that I had was at a mom-and-pop shop, and I worked at my first job for about, I would say, about 5.5, 6 years, and I became a mom in May 2007, and I was just looking for some part-time work back in the coffee business, and I applied at Scooter's. Yeah.
Yeah, so you applied at Scooter's, and from 2007, and when did you start owning your own franchise?
2016. So I was with Scooter's for about 9.5 years before we took the leap and bought our own Scooter's.
Wow. Okay. So I have to ask, why, what attracted you to Scooter's Coffee as far as the opportunity? What was it about Scooter's Coffee's opportunity that made you want to buy into it?
Really, so we are a national recognized brand. And one thing that I love about that is a lot of places you go, they know what Scooter's Coffee is, especially in the Midwest. But it also has that mom and pop feel, a family feel still. Even though we're growing, we're expanding, we still have that family feel. And so back then, even when I started in 2007, I noticed that right away. And it just became more and more apparent as the years went on. Wow, we're growing. Wow, we're big. Wow, we're getting recognized. But it still felt like a family. And so that's really why we wanted to buy into it. We love the product. We love the company. And we just love what it's done for our personal family as well.
I like it. I like it. Okay. So when you got involved, when you guys decided to get started in your franchise, obviously that's pretty risky. That's kind of scary. Did you have some fears and some doubts? Talk about this.
I did have fear, and I had doubt. I never thought, really, I wanted to become an owner. I loved working for Scooter's Coffee. I loved everything it stood for. Why would I want to take a risk if I love what I'm doing? And
right.
we just got presented an opportunity one day, my husband and I, and really without even thinking too hard about it, we said, yes, let's do this. You know, I love being in the store. I love being a barista, and why not just make a career out of it even more so and have more freedom in the long haul? And so really
sure.
that's what it came down to. It was just a simple, it was just, we didn't overcomplicate it, and we just said yes and took the plunge, really.
So now, do you work the business by yourself? Do you have, is it a husband and wife team? How is the operation?
So it's not, it's somewhat a husband and wife team. I'm in the store full time as I manage, I'm a barista and the owner. And my husband, he works at Harvest Roasting for Scooter's Coffee. He supplies, which Harvest Roasting supplies all of the beans and all the product to all the Scooter stores. So that's his full time gig. But he does occasionally come in and help and all of that. But he's involved with the business. But I'm more on the hands-on, day-to-day business.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay, so you have three kids, and are they involved in the business yet?
You know, I have a 10-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 4-year-old, and they're not so much involved in the business, but my 10-year-old, I bring him to work sometimes, and I kind of let him I like when he watches me work when it comes to customer service and worth ethic and integrity. And I just don't think you can really teach them even too young about that. So I bring them to work for an hour or an hour or two at a time. And I kind of show them, you know, what's important, and the people is really what's the most important about Scooter's Coffee. And I really try to teach him that. So when I bring them
sure.
to work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that, giving them the opportunity to observe not only mom at work, but having, you know, mom interact with your customers, with your employees, is a great learning experience as well. So let me ask you this. There's probably some people listening who are thinking about taking the plunge into owning their own business, or, you know, maybe even taking the plunge into owning a franchise. What are some of the things that you would give, what kind of advice would you give somebody about jumping into a franchise situation?
I would say, A, you have to like what the franchise stands for. And so what our franchise stands for, Scooter's Coffee, is obviously a great quality product, but it really comes down to the people. The people that we serve, the people that we hire, the people that are on, you know, the corporate staff. So if you like the core of the business, the people, the coffee, or whatever it may be, I think that you can succeed. But if you're just so-so about it, like, you know, I think this will be good money in the future, but you're not really passionate about the actual company or the actual franchise, I say get out. But if you are passionate about the core of the company, take the plunge, take the risk, do it.
Absolutely.
Really.
And I want to emphasize what you said there. You got to love what you're doing. If you are just doing it for the money, I think that's a great, formula for failure. But if you're doing
exactly.
it because you love to do it, then that's something different. Now, I'm assuming that you're a coffee drinker. Is that right?
I'm a huge coffee drinker. I make a pot of coffee before I even come to the coffee shop in the morning. So we are a huge coffee family. I don't know if I would be able to survive without coffee. I have a cup of coffee before work. I make my latte when I get to work. And before I leave for the day, I have another latte.
That's funny. Yeah, yeah. You know, interestingly enough, speaking of coffee, I read a story about Sylvester Stallone. And so when he was doing Rocky III, and I think that's the one where he fights the Russian guy played by Dolph Lundgren. You know, for those of us who remember, he got really cut, really ripped for that movie. And anyway, he... in this interview I read, he said that he was drinking 25 cups of coffee a day.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, and eating very little to get down to that really ripped cut situation. He says, obviously, I don't advise anybody to do that. It was completely unhealthy. It was dumb of me to do it.
But at that time, that was the fastest way for me to get there. And anyway, so just as a side note, coffee, you know, played a big part there in Rocky III. All right, so let's talk about this. Challenges. You've been a franchise owner for how long now?
Oh, just since October, so about 10 months now.
Going up on your first year, what was like the biggest surprise or challenge going from an employee to an owner? Anything that stands out?
You know, there wasn't too many challenges. The people at Scooter's Coffee really helped us get to where we are very smoothly, very seamlessly. So there wasn't too many challenges, I would say. I mean, yes, there was some different things that I needed to learn when it comes to the books and taxes and all of that. But really the biggest surprise would be the freedom that you kind of have owning your own business. Just when it comes to just so much, and there's just so much freedom, and it's fun. Every day it's fun because, again, I'm passionate about what I do. And to right. realize every day I'm walking into work that this is mine, this is my future, it's pretty cool. It's real. I mean,
right.
really, that's awesome.
And I'm going to pick on one of the words that you use, which is you said kind of freedom, because as business owners, especially in the very beginning, we do have some freedom, but at the same time, we're on the clock 24/7. Do you feel that way? Is that you're constantly thinking about the business?
You know, yes, but I was trained super well with Scooters because I was with them for about 9.5 years before. And so they really invest a lot in their people when it comes to management and, you know, the future. So they really trained me very well when it comes to thinking about the business 24/7, when it comes to being, you know, basically on the clock 24/7. So that was something I didn't know I was going to be grateful for then, but I am grateful for now.
Now, okay, so you bring something up, and I think this is an area where a lot of small businesses fail, and that is in the training. I think that, a lot of people kind of, their training program is to train from the hip, so to speak. They don't have stuff written down. Scooters, I'm assuming, had everything written down. They had a system for everything.
Oh, yes, and a system for everything, and they're always trying to improve, trying to see where can they do better. You know, of course, the main things is amazing coffee, amazing people, amazingly fast, and we fine-tune those. But then they try and continuously train, whether it's their baristas, the management, the franchisees. There's constant tools when it comes to training. And they really want, you know, each individual to succeed, whether what department they're in. So that's one thing that I've always seen and I've always trusted when it came to Scooters.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Okay, so as a, what do you call it? Before you were the manager of the store. Now, did you by chance take over the store that you were the manager of?
No, I did not. That store, I did not take over. I took over a completely different model. The one that I managed was a drive-through and a sit-down, and the one that I took over is just a kiosk, so just a drive-through.
Oh, interesting. Just a kiosk.
Yeah.
When you say just a drive-through, okay, so paint a picture for me. There, obviously, okay, you're saying it's not a sit-down retail-type location. People just pull up one in, grab their coffee, and go. So it's a smaller location.
Yes, a smaller location, only drive-through. So they stay in their cars, they order at the speaker box, and we deliver their coffee at the window. So we're mostly drive-through anyway with Scooter's Coffee, so I just thought this is the perfect location.
Now, as far as overhead, I'm assuming this has got to be a lot less overhead than if you had a retail location with sit-down, because you don't need as many – well, first of all, you don't need as much space, so you're not paying as much in rent. You don't need as many employees. Am I right thinking this?
Exactly. You're exactly right. Overhead is much cheaper.
Yeah. And coffee is one of those great products that has a lot of profit built into it. And so if you're able to trim your labor, then you're really able to take to leverage the profitability that coffee brings.
Exactly. Yes.
All right, so here you are. You're coming up on your first year. Have you had any thoughts of, okay, this is working pretty good. I'm thinking maybe expanding in a year or two, or have we not gotten there yet?
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm very slow when it comes to taking the plunge, but I haven't thought about that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what, and I want to point this out, because in the beginning of the show, you were talking about the difference that scooters is, right? The what scooter stands for is this family-friendly environment, and not to take anything away from, Starbucks. You know, Starbucks is a great experience. They have a great atmosphere, but it's totally different from the scooters experience from your description. When I think of Starbucks, I'm not thinking of this family-friendly type environment. Not that they're not friendly, not that it's not a good environment, but it's a different environment. It's really more corporate environment. It's still a good experience.
Is.
Still, they still deliver good coffee, but it's a brand. Difference. And I just wanted to point that out, that here you are, you're in the same business, you're delivering a similar product, but the experience is totally different.
Yes, and that's where I think we get a lot of our customers too. They love the experience that they get from scooters. And I will never, ever knock Starbucks. You know, they're obviously, they know what they're doing. But the experience that we give each individual customer at each Scooters Coffee House location, I believe it's just a different experience.
Right.
It's more family.
Right.
More friendly.
Right.
Friendlier, I believe.
More friendly. Yeah, and then to take that difference one step over is you're a drive-through kiosk, and so if somebody is looking to sit down at a coffee shop, they're going to pass your kiosk. They may go to another Scooters that offers the sit-down experience, but if somebody wants to grab their coffee on the go, they're going to stop by your kiosk because it's exactly what they're looking for.
Exactly, yes.
Now, are you in a busy parking lot? Tell me about your location.
We are right off of I-80 in Omaha, Nebraska. So we are more – so we have a lot of people coming off the interstate, going to the interstate, traveling. We're more in a business district, I'd say. There's a lot of car dealerships around. So we're not necessarily in that neighborhood, but we are in a very busy street corner in central Omaha, I'd say.
Gotcha. And so, again, because of your location, it sounds like it's a prime location, and you make your, you're attracting your traffic. They're stopping by because you're convenience to them as they're getting off or getting on the I-80 there. Am I right? It's just a high traffic area?
You're correct, yes. High traffic area.
I love it. And this is great because I've not heard of scooters. As you said, it's really well known there in the Midwest. And, you know, since you're there in Omaha, Nebraska, of course, I'm thinking Warren Buffett is probably keeping an eye on you guys. He's waiting for where you hit that multi-billion-dollar mark so he can gobble up scooters I've heard, I don't know him, but I've heard he's a wonderful guy to work for. He doesn't change anything. He likes investing in successful companies and leaving them alone. So it's going to be fun to see what Warren Buffett does, if anything.
Yeah, that would be fun to see. Just waiting for that perfect opportunity, I'm sure.
Absolutely. I mean, he is known as a coffee drinker. I know that much. And he seems like a very unpretentious guy from the interview. He seems like your typical Midwestern, right? Very homey, down to earth, and not afraid of working hard. Let's talk about charity causes real quick. As a business owner, are you involved in any charitable causes? Is Scooters involved in any charitable causes?
You know, one thing awesome about Scooters is they have a program, it's called the Day of Giving, where they help each individual store or franchisee, they help them with a charitable cause. We actually do have a charitable cause. It's the JDRF, so the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. And so it hits close to home for us. Our youngest daughter during the process of owning our store was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. And so we really got involved with the cause right away. We had a day of giving where 100% of each individual's purchase went straight to that to that cause. And so we had our first one. It was on a snow day in the Midwest when all school was canceled, and we raised more than we ever would have thought. And so we are able to give back to the JDRF, and it goes full circle. You know, the JDRF has helped us, so we wanted to help them, and then Scooters wanted to help us help a cause that was close to our heart. And so they did all our marketing. They pushed so much social media out for us. They got the word out, and it was an amazing, amazing experience. And, you know, I get really emotional talking about it because it's such a dear cause to our heart, and Scooters knows that, and they were with us 100% of the way when it came to this cause. And it was just, they don't only do it for us, they do it for any cause that is close to somebody's heart. So it's awesome how they do that.
Yeah, that's incredible. And it's good to do that. It's good to be in a position to give back. I think that it's been said many times, you know, that the secret to living is giving. And I think that it's a great way to, reconnect you with humanity when you give back to a favorable charity or a cause, or you help somebody. I think it's always good, it's good for all of us to do that. It's a great way to, you know, stay connected, kind of stay humble and realize that it's not always about the money. Success is great when you can share it with your favorite charities.
Exactly. And I like how you said stay humble, because that's one thing that Scooters has taught me throughout the years is staying humble. That's one of our core values. And, you know, when they came up with the Day of Giving, it was just, yes, this is something that Scooter stands for, and staying humble and connecting with people. And that's exactly what it does.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Jenna, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to having you back again, talking more about Scooter success and running your own business. Thank you so much for stopping by today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You bet. Good stuff there from Jenna Moulton out of Omaha, Nebraska, where she is running her very first business as owner-operator of a Scooters franchise. So a lot of good insight there. All right, let's continue with our next guest here, Sam Waterfall. Sam Waterfall is not only a regular contributor here, but he's a founder and expert consultant at Obvious Marketing, specializes in creating practical marketing growth strategies for ambitious growth businesses around the world. His clients include O2, Virgin, Oriel, as well as small businesses and startups around the world. Sam Waterfall, welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. How are you doing? Good evening from London. So good to be back.
It's good to have you here. That's right. I forgot. Good evening in London. Good to have you here. And I want to kind of jump into this because, one of the things that Obvious Marketing is well known for is some of your publicity. So I want to talk about how can new brands, startups get publicity. Let's talk about this.
Yeah, it's just so important, and we're doing this a lot at the moment, but we're working with a lot of new businesses, startups, and also some charities, people who are really trying to get themselves noticed. And I think there's perhaps a misconception, one of these famous marketing myths. People think they need to start spending money on advertising. And when it comes down to it, when you're getting started, not only does publicity cost you a lot less, it's not that it's free, that would be another myth, but you can go so much further and have such more credibility if you do something where you get the media, you get other people talking about your business or your idea or your charity or your activity, rather than you trying to go out there and necessarily pay for advertising to get your message out there. So that's kind of the first message.
And so let's talk about this a little bit, because you mentioned something that's important, that is credibility. Why should I be concerned with credibility? You know, how do I monetize credibility? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we heard from your last contributor, we've been hearing about Scooters Coffee. And of course, it was mentioned in the context of Starbucks coffee. And whereas one is a not even just a national, but very much a global player, Starbucks is known everywhere. And Scooter's there in the Midwest in Omaha, Nebraska, you know, relatively small comparatively. So not so well known. So when someone turns up from out of town and they see that, they need to know that this is a good thing. Now, if they hear someone on the radio talking about how they just got the best cup of coffee at Scooter's, then that's really that's public relations, that's publicity. It's a third party endorsement. And the fact that someone's bothering to mention it's good probably means it is good. So it's that power of a third party testimonial.
Yeah,
when you,
I like
when
that.
You got that, you talk about how you market it, how you monetize that. It's because people believe that much more, because if it's my business, then I would say it's going to be great coffee. But actually, the fact that someone else is talking about it, then they're not going to put their reputation on the line unless it really is good. So I think that's really where that makes the biggest difference.
Absolutely. You know, in today's world, more than ever, people are looking at social proof as an indicator of quality. And when I say they're looking at social proof, they're looking at Yelp. They're looking at review sites like Yelp. They want to know from other people that they can go and have a good experience at your location, right? And maybe it's not that important when it's a $2 or $3 cup of coffee, but when you're looking at invest, you know, maybe you're going to take your special someone to a nice restaurant. You want to know if it's a nice experience. Certainly, if you're looking at spending more than, let's say, $50 or $100, people really start looking at that. But, you know, I have two teenage girls at home, and they're really big on looking at reviews. And to them, you know, it doesn't matter if they're going to spend $5 or $10. They go to the review sites first before they head on to the establishment to see, you know, to get an indication of what they can experience. And so if you're right, so if they can see a podcast or radio interview, you know, maybe some stuff on YouTube besides the review sites, then it gives them a big comfort feeling.
Absolutely. It's just knowing that someone else believes it too, not just the person who's trying to sell it. I think that's what it really comes down to.
Yeah. And I like what you said. If you know, it's our business, so of course people expect us to say good things about our business, and so therefore we can say, hey, my business is great, and that is, you know, and they're going to discount that by 90%. But if you have a third party that says, hey, you know, this place is great, then that they believe that person because it's what do you call it? As you said, a third party. It's not associated with the brand, and so it makes a big difference. Let's talk about this real quick. Let's talk about press releases. And I want to talk, you know, press release services, you know, like yours and things of that nature. So give us kind of your thoughts about press releases. Are they still something that people should be looking at today? Has it become, what do you call it, old school? Talk about this.
Yeah, I think it's a great question, actually, because, of course, press releases have been around, well, it seems like as long as the press, right? And
right.
The media has moved on dramatically. So there's still a place for the press release. I think it can sometimes be overlooked, but it's probably best used as part of a wider publicity strategy. And why do I say that? When it comes to publicity, I think there's really two very clear routes at the moment. The first one, these days you'll see many articles, you know, for the likes of Forbes or Entrepreneur or CNN, Fast Company, those kind of magazines. It's great to get your mention as a company in these magazines and their online versions. But what you actually find there is, it's not just that they have staff writers anymore. They have many contributors who contribute to various magazines and outlets. And these people, they've got their details, they've got their social media, they've got their connections on all the articles that they write about. And if you want to get featured by them in their kind of publication, then you need to reach out to them and get noticed by them and make sure that your story is interesting. And whether it's a press release or whether you're crafting a specific email right to that person, that's a great way to get yourself into those kind of titles. And I think we mentioned on a previous call as well, but we did mention Harrow, that Help a Reporter Out, which is a fantastic website. It's just at helpareporter.com. And you can sign up there. And what they do is it's the place where reporters go and they post their questions. And you can sign up to various lists as an entrepreneur. So if you're working in a lifestyle business, or if you're working in the travel business, or if you're working in, say, science or education, you sign up to the right list. And what they will do is every single morning and every single evening, they will send out a list of journalist questions where you could possibly have the answer. And you're able to just reach out to them with a quick email, position yourself as an expert, and then potentially get featured as the trusted voice. And they're very good always then at helping you out by giving you a link back to your website and positioning you as the expert who's helped them to make their report or their article.
Yeah, absolutely. Helpareporterout.com or helpareporter.com. And this is a great place to get free publicity. And something else that you said, I want to talk about this a little bit more, and that is that even though it's called free publicity, sometimes free publicity is not really free. It either takes time or it takes money to get free publicity. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's the thinking and the thought time in terms of coming up with a sensible strategy, approaching the right people. Now, these people might write about you or you might go via Help a Reporter and get some free coverage, but it's taken you time and you've had to think about it. And I would also be very open about this. Not every time you reply to Help a Reporter are you going to get coverage, because these people sometimes have very many people. There's a lot of people signed up to that list. So they get a lot of people who are keen to get the publicity. So you need to invest time to put together a really good response to be very helpful to that journalist and show them that you really are the gold standard contributor who's going to make them, as the writer, look the best. So you need to demonstrate that you've got something important to say and something that can make their article stand out and get read. At the end of the day, they're measuring their success in terms of the number of views on their online articles and writing. So that comes back to what we were saying really about good quality press releases, good quality communication to the media. And the model, Bert, that I always think about is the kind of model of an inverted triangle or an inverted pyramid, where you start off at the top with the big idea and you kind of work through into the smaller details later on. And I think sometimes, if we go back to college or to university and school and thinking about the way that we used to write, too many business owners trying to get publicity miss out because they don't nail their big idea in the headline. And these people are so busy, they're getting so many contributions or requests to be part of their articles. If you don't give them a tasty headline, there's no way that they're going to read further and you just get deleted from the inbox. So it's about a skill to work that out. And that's one of the things that we help our clients with when we're writing press releases for them. We listen to the story that they've got and we help them craft that release in such a way that it really gets noticed.
I love this. And I want to talk about this because I want to get your opinion. I'm pretty sure I know what the answer is, but I'm going to ask it anyway to help educate our audience. I'm sure that you've seen press releases that say, this law firm has just hired XYZ to the law firm and he's going to be their newest lawyer in XYZ department. And, or something along the same lines, which is, XYZ company is opening a new location, at whatever city. Right. And, this is, nobody's going to cover this information because it's not really newsworthy. It's not going to help my audience. We don't care about the fact that you hired a new associate or that you're opening up a new location unless it has some meaningful impact to my business, right? I mean, not to my business, but to my life. And so you see a lot of press releases from a lot of corporations talking about themselves, talking about, their latest acquisition, talking about their latest associate or their latest location, and they get no coverage. And of course they say, well, press releases don't work. And the reason it didn't work is because, as you said earlier, the headline was unattractive and their content was unattractive, right?
Absolutely. I'm smiling as you give the examples, because I think, you know, you're spot on with this. But the problem here is that it's that famous publicity radio station. It's the WIIFM, the What's In It For Me. And that's the only station that we're tuned into, apart from Money for Lunch, of course.
Of course.
So, you know, so you see what I did there. So what we are looking for, all of us, you know, it's self-interest, unfortunately. We'd like to think, you know, we're out there really helping other people. But, of course, we're listening out for ourselves to get by in this world, to make our businesses grow. And for people reading a press release, for people reading these headlines, if it's not really answering that question, what's in it for me, they read past it. And you're exactly right. These things are very – they're focused on the internal machinations of the company, and no one wants to know so much about that. If they had said, let's take your example and turn it around, if they said that our local lawyers, they're going to be hiring California's most celebrated family law attorney, something like that, that becomes quite interesting then, because, oh, okay, so what's made this person, or there's some very famous celebrity divorce attorneys, that kind of thing, they get news, because, you know, they are responsible for dividing up these celebrity estates and people are interested in this. So you've got to find the angle on your story that makes it a little bit juicy and that gets someone to click through from the headline and start to read. And if we go back to this inverted pyramid, it's don't then hide the next bit of information too far down. What you need is you've got them to click through. Let's now make our first paragraph really exciting. And you, as you say, we've got to focus on why this is important for the reader and make this beneficial for them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, you know, and another thing that people just need to be a little bit more creative. For example, hey, we're opening up a new location and we're going to be giving, whatever, 50% of our first 30 days worth of revenue or proceeds are going to go to a couple of local charities. That starts to become a little bit more intriguing, but now you have these local charities that are going to help promote that press release, that are going to help promote your brand. So again, sometimes being creative, doesn't hurt.
And one thing I would also say on this as well, and because I totally agree, if we're going out there and trying to get things which are interesting and get coverage, then what we've said is completely right. There would be one sort of exception to this, where you can get away with just releasing news, even if it's not so exciting. And that can be because these days, these press releases go onto the big news sites where they – and these news sites have authority in the eyes of Google. And so by having the right links and backlinks in the press release, you're still able to get links that are picked up by Google and the search engines coming from these authority sites. And that can still be helpful in terms of the search engine optimization and the ranking of a website. So these, in our example, the firm of attorneys, they would benefit from that, even though they might not get a lot of coverage being sort of picked up from that.
I like that. So let's talk about that a little bit more. So let's say that one of these authority sites publishes their press release. That law firm or that business now gets a little SEO juice. They get a couple of links that connect their business. And because they're coming from these high authority sites, then, as you said, it boosts their rankings.
Absolutely. And I think this is something which, you know, it's better to do both. Let's face it, it's better to have a great story which is newsworthy and has an exciting headline and exciting content which people want to pick up and talk about. Some of the charity challenges, we saw the ALS ice bucket challenge, for example, that really took off because it was exciting and it went viral. And then everything that kind of went along with that, these things get publicity and people start talking about them. And I think we previously talked about Paul Hartounian's famous The Man Who Sold Brooklyn Bridge, where he didn't really sell the bridge, but he sold the sleepers off the bridge by cutting them up. But because it was such a curious headline, it really dragged people into the article, into the story, and he's been sort of dining out off that story ever since, which is just a great bit of creativity. So what we're doing these days is, as we're writing a press release for our clients, we're also putting in the keywords, and we're linking back from those keywords back to that maybe a blog post where they can go deeper, because you don't necessarily want to be, Google's very hot on this these days. It's they've done a lot of algorithm changes. We've had the Panda update, and we've had various updates that keep coming through, because Google wants to make sure that they are ranking the finest quality, not just someone who's trying to just get clicks to their website. So we still need to be talking in real quality, really good information. But then by linking back on the story, going to a blog post that takes us deeper into that story, that's the way to do this, and linking through from that. We've done it recently for a couple of our clients. We're working at the moment with a new shirts company. This is an entrepreneur from the fashion industry. Her business is called White and White, and you can find that at whiteandwhite.co.uk. They make luxury shirts for women, and these are high-end premium shirts. It's the sort of forever collection, something that you invest in and it lasts a long, long time. And they are just trying to get on the map. So we're working with them to tell their story, to create the press around the new launch, exciting materials, exciting quality, and tell that, but with the right backlinks back to help them get ranked and found on Google.
Yeah, I like that. And this is a strategy that's available to anybody, really. I mean, putting together a press release, and again, 80% of that press release success is going to be in that headline, and possibly the next is going to be the subheadline, and then of course the content. As you said, you've got them to click, and now that they clicked, you have to really keep that promise. You have to say, hey, here's the great content that I promised you, and if you keep that promise, then they're going to read more and maybe even visit your website. But if they click on that great headline and then, of course, the content doesn't engage them, they're going to be a little frustrated. They're going to walk away going, man.
Yeah. And Google is looking now at the bounce rate. Okay, that's one of the things that affects your ranking of your website, because you can trick someone to get them through, and they call it clickbait, of course. And we see these things all the time on the internet, on social media, especially when you scroll to the bottom of the news sites. There's that kind of dubious area right at the bottom of so many of the news sites where they've got these people that are paying for links, and they have these fascinating stories that seem on the edge of reason or belief. And if you click them, you kind of end up in this sort of dodgy space on the internet. So we need to be really careful and make sure we're providing good quality content. Because if people bounce off the story realizing it's not what they thought it was, Google's going to punish you for that in terms of the ranking. So if we do our media right and we get a good story and we then deliver on that with truthful content and accurate content, there's a double win. And the win for people that we're working with who are using this press release service, what they get is they get this global distribution to leading media channels. They get ranked on the news website. So there's something then that they can talk about. And then the second benefit is these authority backlinks, which genuinely boost their SEO and their ranking. So the nice thing is that if you've just been featured, say you got picked up, we did one for a company we're working with just last week where they're starting a probiotic beverage. And what we did with that one was we told their story. It's called probilife.com. And what we did with ProbiLife was we told their story, we explained the backstory to that, and we got them picked up on Yahoo Finance. And so that was a great bit of extra publicity. It was a really good result for the press release. They were also picked up on over 250 other news sites as well. But Yahoo Finance was the big news. So what they did was they picked up this press release and basically then promoted it around their social site. They used LinkedIn, they used Facebook, and told their existing followers, their existing network, hey, guess what? We're getting noticed. We're right here on Yahoo Finance. So you can turbo boost, you can really supercharge your publicity once you've got it by spinning it further with social media. And the real tip I've got for your listeners today, Bert, is don't just stop by going social. What you can also do is bring in the PPC or the pay-per-click advertising or the Facebook advertising, because if you get your company featured on the likes of Yahoo Finance, you can do a little screenshot of that and get the pictures that you've put there, get the name that's there together with the masthead from the big media title. And you can actually then use Facebook advertising to send that to a targeted audience. So you can put your picture, your brand, and your big story, and you can send that out to thousands of people by using a Facebook lookalike audience and doing that kind of pay-per-click advertising. So suddenly, you're getting so much more mileage, and you're making sure that your target audience that you're choosing, this is when you bring in the advertising. As we say, we went first to get the credibility. And then once we've got the credibility, we've been picked up by the credible third party like Yahoo Finance, and now we can push that. We pay to send that to the right target. And that's, for me, a really smart way of doing obvious marketing.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. There's so many nuggets in this in today's conversation with Sam Waterfall. If you guys want to find out more about Sam Waterfall and his team, you can go to obviousmarketing.com. Obviousmarketing.com. Let's talk about this a little bit. Google, not just Google, but all the search engines change their algorithms all the time. You know, I think Google changes theirs like every 90 days. I don't know how often Bing changes theirs, but they're constantly changing. And of course, every time they change, it can mess with people's rankings. And I want to get your thoughts on this. My SEO strategy, I think that the easiest, simplest, at the same time hardest SEO strategy out there is just creating good content over time, right? I mean, when you look at a Forbes magazine website or any kind of authority site, it's because they have a lot of good content. And I think that some of the stuff that you talked about today just kind of reinforces that, you know, if you have good content on your press release, it's going to get picked up. It may get picked up by multiple news sites or authority sites. And bottom line is, if you have a strategy to consistently put out good content, whether it's video, whether it's podcast, whether it's articles, then you're going to have good SEO results over time, no matter what the changes are. What do you think about that? You think I'm right? Think I'm wrong? Give me your opinion.
Bert, I think you're spot on. I'm nodding along here in London, just listening to what you're saying, because I think you're exactly right. It comes really down to a decision. I think as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, we need to make a decision that we're going to put out good quality content. I was reading something that was actually an interview with Neil Patel. Neil Patel is held up in the entrepreneurs community as one of the very finest bloggers. And he said that, when he was getting started, he was just writing, and he made a commitment to write every single day, to write a blog post. And it seems to be, if we look at WordPress and some of the other technologies, and then we read what it takes to write a good blog, Google and the other search engines, they want to see about 300 words plus. So what we're talking about is, on a daily basis, Neil Patel was writing 300 words plus of good content. And you know what? He did it for a year, and then he did it for another year. And now he's several years into this campaign. But you know what? He's world famous.
He is.
He made that decision. Now, it doesn't take a long time to write 300 words. It's maybe half an hour. And the thing is, you don't have to just sit there and say, well, what am I going to write today? Every time you're browsing the web and you get a little bit of an inspiration, make a note of it and say, well, that could be what I'm going to use next week, or here's a theme for tomorrow. So it's just about picking up on what's around you, but it was the consistency. So it's exactly what you're saying. And by writing about a topic consistently, what he was doing was creating effectively, although it's posts on a blog, it's like page after page in the eyes of Google, and they've got relevant keywords, and it builds up authority over time. That's exactly what you're suggesting happened with Forbes, because Forbes has got article after article about business business, about people doing business, about business best practices, about good strategy. And over time, it's kind of just grown and grown. And now, of course, with all their contributors, they're growing at an alarming rate, and it's kind of escalating and growing even faster. And that means it gets stronger and stronger. The authority sort of center of gravity gets even better. But even small businesses and new startups that we've been talking about on our call today, they're the ones who can start consistently and start publishing content, great quality content about their area of expertise. And Google rewards that. That's what's going to get you found. It's going to get you ranked well. So I absolutely agree with you.
Yeah, I love it. And you know what? Neil was a regular contributor here. I love Neil. Him and I were fortunate enough to talk at some of the same places, and just a really nice guy, and thoroughly enjoy spending time with him. Not only is he very knowledgeable, but he's very generous with his time and his knowledge as well. Let's talk about this. So here we are. We got this press release out there. It's doing okay. What can I do to boost that press release? I mean, what's your thought on things like social media?
Sure. I think the thing to do here is try to, because we're talking about online now, most of these press releases, and certainly our service, allows our clients to send a visual together with the headline and together with the contents of the press release. And that means when it gets posted, if you get onto Yahoo Finance or you get onto CNN or wherever it might be picked up, you can then take a screenshot of that picture together with the brand name CNN or Yahoo Finance and your picture that you've chosen. And that's really, really powerful, because you've then got, if you like, a publicity story. And it could be Forbes, it could be Fast Company, whatever it might be, but there is your brand, your logo, your choice of main picture, and you can spin that. You can send that out and share it amongst your existing followers. You could send that by email to your existing list. Let people know that you've been picked up. Tell them you're excited about it. You know, let's be honest about this. This is great news. We've been picked up in the media. Just wanted to let you know about this. We're sharing this. And you can then spin that story, talk about it, say why you're sharing it, tell the people why they should read the article, why you shared the information in the first place. And then beyond that, once you've got that image, you can then, as I say, you can target this with paid advertising. Once you've got that going, you can use what's called a lookalike audience on Facebook. And that means that you can literally build using demographics. We might say we want to go to we might only have, say, 1,000 followers or fans on our Facebook, but what if we want to go to 25,000? Well, we can ask Facebook to build a lookalike list, and we can pay to send out to thousands more people. And that way we take this. So the first impression that we're creating for our clients is this huge credibility. We made a small contribution. We did our press release. We told the story we wanted to have seen. And suddenly now I'm advertising, but with the weight of CNN saying, have a read of this, or Yahoo Finance saying, read what Sam's saying. This makes a lot of sense. And so that is a huge way of leveraging the credibility of this third-party publicity and telling it to the people who you want to find your service. So that for me is really smart marketing. It's obvious marketing.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And I love the idea of the expanded audience, or the custom audience, or the lookalike audience, I'm sorry, that you were talking about. A lot of people aren't aware of that. And if you have questions about a lookalike audience, you can go to obviousmarketing.com. You connect with Sam and his team there. So let's talk about this. Using the lookalike audience, when we do a lookalike audience, do you have like a starter budget that you'd say, hey, listen, you know, let's start with $100 or $1,000, or what is your thoughts on budgets, or is it just too custom? What do you call it? Too customized talk about.
Well, often, but when I'm doing this, I'm doing it for one of my clients. And what we're trying to do there is show them that this is going to work. And the wonderful thing, really, about the way that paid advertising has developed now is that you can put together a relatively small budget and just test something. So if I'm working with a client, they don't want to burn $1,000 just testing something. I'll say to them, look, let's put $100, $200 in a pot, and let's just test this small, and let's start to see whether we're getting other people sharing this. Let's see if we're getting people liking this. Let's see if we're getting people clicking through from the advert and actually buying something from your site. And if it's working, let's scale up. But it's wonderful that you can also test, you know, don't just create one ad with this. Take that picture that we talked about grabbing from the publicity, from the press release, and make it into two or three adverts with different headlines and test that.
Mm.
So that way you're doing split testing together with this new piece of sort of media that you've created. Because we don't, you know, this is the thing, you know, we have to spend a lifetime, right, being marketing students. We know some things that work. We can, of course, model winning adverts from before. There's things we know that are more likely to work. So we start with those, but of course we test around that as well and try and optimize. That way you really make the very most of this. And one other thing I was going to say as another tip but that we do, beyond this, what we're also trying to do for some of our clients, we're reaching out to journalists specifically. So we've got a service which is basically a monthly gig where we reach out for some of our clients, and we do this service where we call up and we research 50 journalists in their field around the world, basically based on their brief. You know, if they're only wanting to sell in the US, then we look for 50 journalists in the US. If it's global, we'll go worldwide. And what we do is we then craft the story and send it to those journalists, 50 people per month on an ongoing basis. Do we guarantee that? Well, we guarantee it over 3 months. You can't guarantee that the story is going to get picked up by any journalist. But of course, by following the stories that we've said, following the advice that we've been talking about on this call today, we're able to maximize the headline, maximize the interest of the journalist, sending it to targeted people who are likely to be interested. And we're finding we're getting a great pickup with that. So that kind of service where we're approaching journalists works really well.
You know, and I want to, you know, I want to say this real quick. I love this idea for a couple of reasons. But first of all, because it's highly targeted. But second of all, and this is something that's so important, familiarity, you know, builds trust. So could you imagine if somebody hears from you and you know, a journalist hears from me, I'll use me as an example. Hey, I'm Bert Martinez. I'm a sales and marketing guy, and I can talk about sales and marketing, or I can, you know, whatever. And so the first time that may fall on deaf ears, or and they may like, who cares? But over time, just like all good marketing or branding, sooner or later they may say, I need somebody in sales and marketing, and they're going to reach out. And there may, you know, and I may be lucky enough to be on their short list, right? Because I've reached out to them 5, 6, 10 times, and so I'm in the top of mind, or maybe they're going to do a quick email search on their email, and they're going to say, oh, here's that guy. I couldn't remember his name, but I knew he had to do with sales and marketing, so I'm going to reach back out to him. This is called building a relationship, and it does take time.
It really does. And I think, but we can get smart about it, as you know, Bert, these days. I mean, because we've got the Facebook pixel, we've got retargeting options across Google, across Facebook. And this means that even if someone just bounces off your site very quickly, using the retargeting technology, you've noticed this, of course, when you click on a website, suddenly it seems, gosh, this brand's following me around the web. And the first response, you know, as marketers, we know what's going on here. We understand the story. But when this first happens to you, you think, my goodness, these people, they must be spending a fortune. They're advertising everywhere. And the reality is, of course, they've cookied your computer. And it means that whenever you visit a certain site, they are able to do that. And with Facebook, it means that when they next visit their Facebook feed, guess what will be in the number two position on their news feed? Of course, it's the advert, the paid advert, and with probably the same bit of publicity. So it means that you get seen again, and we see Bert Martinez, the sales and marketing guy, and that expertise starts to percolate into their mind because we are seen repeatedly in lots of different places. So I think, you know, we can go smart, as we've talked about. Start with this wonderful idea of free, if we will, publicity. There's certainly low cost publicity. And then when we've got something which is a great story, which was starting to get traction, and it's got the third party credibility of coming from a big media outlet as well, then let's pay as a new business to start saying, let's invest smart because we've got this credibility factor. And then we can take it even further and show this more than once, maybe 6 or 7 times, so that people see it repeatedly around the web. And one of these things might be enough then, with these different tested headlines, to bring them back. And finally, we get our sale. And guess what? Is that hard work? Yeah. We work really hard in marketing, don't we, to get a result. We work really hard to make this happen. But guess what's the opposite? So many brands and so many businesses are just fading away unnoticed. People, they go to a site, they decide they don't like it, they click off, they never go back. So what we're doing here, we're talking about giving yourself the very best chance as a new business, as a new idea, to get what you're really wanting, to get those new customers in and buying.
I love it. I love it. And if people want to find out more about you, I'm going to give out this specific website. It's called services.obviousmarketing.com. Is that
right? And what they'll exactly, so services.obviousmarketing.com. What they'll find there is all of our gigs. We've got lots of different ways that we help people. So it could be about using Twitter. It could be about the retargeting we've just talked about. It could be about targeting journalists. It can be about SEO. It can be about making sure your website has got the right content, writing your blog post for you. All of this is available just as a service where you buy the bit you specifically need. And it's all there, as you say, services.obviousmarketing.com.
I love it. As always, good to have you on the show, Sam Waterfall, obviousmarketing.com, services.obviousmarketing.com. Sam, looking forward to having you back again, my friend.
Thank you so much. Bye for now. Bye-bye.
All right. Good stuff there from Sam Waterfall from services.obviousmarketing.com. Just tons of useful information. You may want to listen to this recording over and over again. And even take some notes, or you can go to services.obviousmarketing.com, check out the different gigs that Sam can help you with. As always, we're grateful for you stopping by. And as always, remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.